Hi, and welcome to the They Call Me the Ghost podcast, a podcast for those looking for good stories, looking for adventure. Hello, it's the Ghost. Welcome to your weekly dose of the real world, where truth is stranger than fiction and things are not always as they seem. For one woman, she has been diagnosed with something extremely serious, and it's no joke. She is on the edge of major life-changing events, society deeming her unfit and in need of care. But through it all, her story never changes. She's consistent and persistent in trying to get those around her, those that love her, to believe. Is there anything worse than knowing something that you realize that others can't comprehend? Your head spins and there's nowhere to turn. What you can hope for is that there will be that one person that is willing to take that chance on what you have to say. They call me the Ghost. I was an agent for the CIA, but today am an independent operative working on the side of the mysterious and unbelievable. This story takes the idea that things are not always what they seem to a whole new level and allows us to know what might seem odd in the everyday is simply the everyday in the end. Take a listen and enjoy. As always, I've changed the names of all involved and changed other exact details, keeping the feel and mood of what went on while protecting privacy where need be. This request was one that I wanted to share around New Year's because as I was thinking about what I wanted to do, I thought about hope. We all have big dreams and goals for ourselves and our lives as the ball drops or the fireworks fly on New Year's. How great can we be this year? What would it take for our dreams to come true? We relive that dream year after year, and that's hope. No matter what happens, we have hope that things can be different. That's one of the great things about us. Elna, who is the focus of this story, also had hope. For her, she was living in a nightmare and wanted out. More than out, she really wanted to resolve what was going on, but there was no one to listen. When I'm contacted by her husband, Jabula, they were at the end of their rope. He was devoted to his wife above all else, and she was hurting. She was confused. She was sick, they said. But in his devotion, he'd lost the logic that others held on to during that whole ordeal, and he wanted to believe that his wife really did know something. The request already looked interesting when it came through. It started out as an introduction from a man. He said he was Jabula Dogo and that he was from Namibia and that he was reaching out to me in a last effort to save his wife and his life with her. He said his wife was at the end of a long road of pain and confusion, that things had gotten to a point where she was now considered a lost cause by most, but not by him. He shared that he thought there was something happening with her or to her, that she did not lose her mind, quote unquote, as people thought. Her issue was that she was telling everyone that she was being contacted from an unknown and that it needed her and that it had to go. And this was happening over and over again. And he shared his thoughts on this, and although he was trying very hard to hold on to his belief, there was one thing he was sure he knew, and that was that if she were right, it was something big, bigger than anything he thought he could handle. He needed someone to come in and at least analyze what was going on, a more professional opinion of it all, and read. Either way, he no longer felt qualified to handle whatever this all was. And lastly, he wanted confirmation that he himself was not losing his own mind in it all. He asked if I would take the trip to see him and meet her. He felt bad about asking. I could tell that just by reading his words, but as he explained, it would do no good to try to write about all that it was. It wouldn't make any sense, and he would only sound like a madman himself refusing to see something others say is the truth. Another thing he said was that he thought his wife was a target, that somehow she was chosen. Was it because they didn't live near anyone out there on the vineyard? He didn't know. He didn't have that answer. He had no answers, and that's what he's looking for. Him mentioning that he thought his wife was chosen kind of got to me. I get the feeling, just by reading that little bit in the request, that there is something to this. And without a whole lot of information, I'm already interested. Now, Frankie was with me in the warehouse that day, as was Ryder. Harley was, unfortunately, across town. So Ryder and I start to do our digging while Frankie scopes out our location and what's going on there. And Ryder and I find that Jabula is who he says he is. His vineyard is second generation to his family, but it's been around for a long time. It's the little vineyard that could. He's the area that he's in, you know, it's not Napa or something like that, but they're finding their presence in the wine community and it's going quite well for them. We find out that he and Elna married in their 20s. They returned recently, now in their 30s, and committed to the vineyard. But not long after they got there, things started to happen to Elna. Now, the vineyard is actually in her family line, but together they were welcomed in to help take it on and carry it on. This vineyard had been around for many, many years. The family that had it eventually sold it, and it was Elna's father who moved his family from India, and that's a long story, came in and bought it. Elna was the oldest of three daughters, and her father looked to her and Jabula to start taking over the biz. They were all there, though. The family was close. They were close and close by, helping out in different ways. From what we found, I mean, this family was known in the area, and there wasn't a bad thing about them. Elna gave the place a facelift. She was working on bottle label designs and was coming up with new products. She was a motivated businesswoman. The vineyard was written up a few times locally that we could find, and by all accounts, things seemed to be going really good. In learning what we did, they were legit, they were good people, and things were moving along nicely for them. And knowing that only fueled my curiosity. Needless to say, it was 3 days later that the three of us, Frankie, Ryder, and I, went to Namibia. And I have to let you know, I'm skipping over some things here about what else was going on, what was happening at the warehouse, where was everyone else, because this story takes a while. So we're just going to fast forward a bit. We get to the vineyard in Namibia, and Jabula's waiting outside in front of their pretty big place. I mean, it's large, but it's quaint at the same time. There's this smaller patio, covered patio area, and it's got these little lights hanging down, and we see a man sitting there. He's by himself. He's got one candle lit. He's drinking a glass of red wine. And that is Jabula. Going through our introductions, I mean, you could just tell right away how genuine this man was. You know, he invites us to sit. He has someone there take our bags and brings out bread and grapes and wine and water and things like that. And we chat. It's not hard to see that this man is sleep deprived and very stressed out. Happens to the best of us. And it's definitely happened to him. We take our time. We tell him about ourselves, and we learn from him that he got my information from a United States contact that he has through the wine and diamond business. Apparently, his side of the family works in the diamond trade there. Anyway, we go over what he sent and what he said, and then I leave it open for him to tell us more, and he does. He tells us how his Elna is his soul, and that if he's wrong and there's nothing to find, she will be taken from him, and he will no longer be able to go on the vineyard. He'll be lost. And then he tells us how scared he is that is exactly what's going to happen. So then he gets into how it all went down. He explains how one night he and Elna were both sitting there, as they used to do often at the end of a long day, and Elna was just a bit off and had been for a while. She just wasn't right. When he asked her what was wrong, she said she was afraid that she was losing her mind, that she'd been hearing this broken up voice, like it was distant and unclear. And when he asked her what the voice said, she said it sounded like he was saying, "He must go." And she could barely hear it, but this voice also knew her name, she said, which was causing her fear. She didn't even tell Jabula about it for a while after it started. She was too afraid. But she was sure that something was there to take her. She just couldn't figure it all out. Finally, breaking down then and not being able to make any sense of it herself, that's when she opened up to her husband about what was going on that one evening. There was a voice, told her it must go. It needed her for something. Something was there, and she didn't know what any of it meant. Jabula told us he wasn't even sure what to do with what she said. He couldn't understand what she was saying to him. It actually scared him, too, more in the sense that there was something wrong with his wife. But she was pretty adamant that there was a voice. That wasn't even a question. Her question, or need really, was what could they do about it? Because she wanted it to stop. And so he said they worked out a little plan. He thought it maybe was stress for her. Maybe she was tired and working too much. They had made big changes. The business was becoming their life. Maybe she just needed a break. So he finally talked her into the idea, and they did. They took a trip. They went away to take a break from it all. But instead of helping her to be away from it, it was almost like it hurt her, and she was sick because of it. They cut their trip short by 3 days, and after they got home, she slept for two. Jabula didn't understand, but he tried to take the attitude that, hey, maybe it was the sleep that she needed and that she'll wake up and she'll feel better. But she did not, and it's only gone downhill since. Elna hasn't left the vineyard since that trip, not even for a quick run to the store for food or other necessities. She does still help on the vineyard, though, but as the time has passed, her issues have only gotten more exaggerated. The voice was saying more, and Elna thought she was seeing things in her dreams, and then the dreams became overwhelming, so much so that these visions, or whatever they were, started happening during the daytime. Jabula would find her at her desk or at night, just staring into nowhere, with an almost somber look on her face. And when he'd snap her out of it, she couldn't really explain it. All she would say is that they were coming, or better yet, they were here. She would wake up in the middle of the night, busting out of a nightmare, telling him that they had to get it. But what it was, they had no idea. Still, nothing made any sense. And this was just one piece to the whole thing. The other part was how it was all being handled, because eventually there were people stepping in. Family members were catching on that there was something wrong, and this led to concern. And the more she talked, it led to more concern. To Jabula, it was a mess, and it was getting out of control. I mean, they got her into counseling. Then she was taking tests and meeting with more doctors. And now, one of her main doctors, because now she had three, they wanted to experiment with drugs after a final diagnosis of delusional disorder with paranoid tendencies. Jabula was in shock. I mean, it all happened so fast. Might not happen that way in all parts of the world, but that's how it went down there. Jabula made a vow that he would not leave Elna's side. She was now at risk for being committed, but they would have to rip her right out of his arms and take her from him. And even then, the fight wouldn't end until they got her. And that's when he called on me. We sat out there for hours that night and talked as Jabula explained more and more details. What we got from it overall was that Elna was either paranoid or someone or something was after her. I mean, she was hearing voices. Could almost sound like schizophrenia, but in Elna's case, her three doctors were certain delusions were the issue. In their eyes, she was obsessed and paranoid that this being would harm her if she didn't get whatever it wanted done. She refused any help offered. She was insistent that what was happening to her was real and refused anyone who disagreed with her or tried to reason with her. People experiencing delusions can function in their normal lives, although it was getting harder and harder for Elna. But for Elna, there was no delusion. There was something or someone trying to get to her or them, and she felt it was imperative that they find this voice so they can get whatever this is, what they need. It was as simple as that. Well, the next morning, we were set to meet Elna. She knew we were coming, and she came out smiling, looking more awake than we were. She was in a very good mood, almost floating across the floor to get her coffee. She pours herself a cup and comes over and sits down next to Jabula. Beautiful woman. They had this large wooden table in there with these benches decorated with bright colored cloth. I mean, the room and the place overall had this feel to it. Lots of wood, lots of color, glass balls hanging on the front porch, little lights, candles in random places. The place was very cozy. And that's where we were. The sun was coming in that morning. I mean, Elna had done well. The place was perfect for sitting and drinking that glass of Cabernet as the sun set. So there we are off the kitchen at this big table. Frankie, Ryder, and I are on one side, and the two of them are on the other. Elna sits down her cup and folds her arm and leans down on the table and just comes right out with it. She says, "So, you guys are going to help us find the voice?" Now, they're asking me what I want to do about it, and we don't have a ton of information. But I look over to Frankie and Ryder, and I think for a minute, and I decide that, yes, I accept the job. Because there was just something about this one, and I wanted to help figure it out. Relief just, you know, melted over Jabula. But then he says to all of us that, well, hopefully we can get it all figured out before 3 weeks from then. And I ask him, what happens in 3 weeks? And he looks over to Elna and says that that's when she would have to leave. She only has one therapy session left, and unless she's miraculously healed, she's going in indefinitely. Elna immediately got up and started to walk out, saying that she's not going anywhere because she is not sick. And she states firmly that the voice is real, that they are here. And the faster we can figure this out, the faster this will all stop. Well, she leaves and Jabula waits for a minute. Then he asks us to follow him. And we go through the house and out the back where we find Elna sitting under the pergola, this little garden area they have back there. Jabula looks to us, and that's our cue. This is the handoff. And I was glad because I really wanted to get into it all and find out what the heck was going on. So I make my way over to Elna and I sit down very slowly and quietly. Her head's down. She's picking at her skirt. So I dip my head down and I turn into her so she can see me. And I reintroduce myself and I let her know that we are there to help. And I tell her that she can count on the fact that we are well aware of things that others refuse to believe. We are open to all of it, including her voice. And that seems to warm her up a bit. When she looks up at me, she does end up smiling. And that tells me that, okay, we're all right. It's okay to get going. I let her know that the first step in all of this will be to get to know the voice and what it's saying so that I can try to make some sense out of it. Well, she gets up and invites us to follow her into the greenhouse, which is just off that back patio area. She says she spends a lot of time in there and then boasts that she's the reason there are so many great plants and flowers and things around the place and on the grounds. And there really was a lot of great stuff. Well, she walks back to the back of the greenhouse and reaches onto this shelf. And from behind some pots, she pulls out this book. It's tan, a little worn looking, like it gets used a lot. And she hands it to me. And I open it up and it's a journal. Elna tells us that she'll write down what's going on from time to time, what the voice tells her and the things that she's seen in her dreams and visions. She didn't get everything. She doesn't always get to that. But what she did write was organized by date and very, very neat. So I'm flipping through this book and Frank and Ryder are sort of wandering around the greenhouse checking out all the cool plants. And then Elna blurts out that they are here. I close the book and look up, and Elna had walked over to the glass and was just looking out. So I walk over to where she is, I join her, and I look out, but there's nothing there. Just fields of green, grape-bearing vines. When I look back to Elna, she's just in a daze, and I see a tear going down her cheek. So I say her name, but nothing. I say it again, and then she snaps out of it, and then she looks over to me, and to Ryder, and to Frankie, and then she just says, "They know you're here." Well, I'm thinking that could be good or that could be bad. We don't have anything we can do about it right at that moment. So we look through more of the book. And there are a lot of things that are repeated from one day to another, like "we are here" and "we must go" and "it's there." Then on one of the pages, and only one, it looked like she was working on a drawing, but then it was all scribbled out, covered up with red crayon. And I ask her about it, but she explains that there was no drawing, really. It was just the color red. She sees it in her dreams and visions all of the time, but she has no idea what it means. After all of that, Frankie, Ryder, and I take some time to ourselves, and we start to go through some of the many things that we brought. And we brought a lot because we didn't know what to expect. It happens all the time. For instance, we have some of our ghost hunter type equipment. However, not really thinking that we're going to need any of that. We have some energy reading devices and some weaponry, just a mix of things, even though in this case, my gut's telling me we're not going to need that. We also have these force field shields that we can break out if something tries to attack us. You know, we're kind of trying to be ready for anything, and we're laying out our options. In the meantime, I'm also sticking pretty close to Elna, who experiences 3 contacts over that time. That's on top of the one where I saw her in the greenhouse. The other 3 times were mixed conditions. There was one more in the greenhouse where she does spend a lot of her time on certain days. Another was in their sunroom out in the front of their home. And then one more when we were in the tasting building, which isn't that far from the house. The greenhouse was the same sort of experience that she already had. The one in the sunroom was a little bit different. She wasn't looking at anything, but instead she was just on the little couch they have in there, and all of a sudden she leaned forward and covered her ears and closed her eyes with her head down, and she said she was being talked to again. Just things like that, you know, must go, it's there, whatever this voice was, it just kind of kept saying the same things. So at this point, we don't have much more than we had when we got there, really. If we're to assume that something or someone is contacting Elna, which we are, then they've picked her for a reason. From what we can gather, we don't think they want her specifically, though. But maybe there's something that she can get for them. But I mean, if she can get it, and we're assuming it has to do with the vineyard, but why not also contact Jabula or some of the other family members, like Jabula's father, Festus, or Elna's sister, Amara, for instance? There has to be a reason for that, too. And then we have the color red. This is in Elna's head, and it's been in the communications, so what does it have to do with anything? You know, the main colors of the vineyard do include red, but is that a connection? I mean, we just don't know. And while all these other things are going on, we've also been witness to some of the family address the issue, Elna's issue, from time to time. I mean, Elna got in a fight with her other sister, Nira, and she was bombarded the other day by a few family members at one time who were pleading with her to realize her illness. And then, after all of that, one of her doctors stopped by in an unannounced visit and had this meeting with the whole family. It was a little awkward for us to be lingering in the background, and that doctor, that lady, didn't love us very much. She said we were fueling this woman's delusions. She was even telling the family they should send us away because we were only hurting the situation. I mean, I can't even tell you what kind of a night that was. And after all that was done, what was going on between Jabula and the rest of the group. But through it all, Jabula was seriously committed to his wife and the situation. I mean, this guy was a rock. He never budged. He stood his ground and stood behind what he was trying to do. And he had a good point, in my opinion. He and Elna were on a countdown, less than 3 weeks now. And she was set to be committed for further evaluation and care. This was something that weighed heavy on Jabula because only he could authorize such a thing. And in a weak moment, he did. And now he regrets that, but he's trying to do something about it. Yep, the pressure was on that day, but the day did pass. The good thing that came out of all of that was that the doctor and the family did talk to the three of us for a bit in the beginning. You know, they wanted to get to know us, find out more about who we are. And in that time, we threw out some little questions here and there to get to know a little bit about Elna, things that maybe Jabula, in his stressed out state, wouldn't even think to tell us. And we discovered that Elna was different. When Elna was young and still in India, she was used in experiments. You know, many around telepathy. She passed every challenge they gave her and was apparently some kind of teen superstar in the area. If she focused, she could pick up on your thoughts, they told us, through her mind alone, you know, without any of the other five senses. We didn't get a ton of information, but we did get that. And this was important for us because maybe she was chosen. I mean, no one else had special gifts or a different sort of mind. So was she chosen because their communications were only possible through her? Well, we were going with that because it made sense. So now, using that logic, we now know why she's being targeted. After the whole group took off, after the family and doctor left, we sit with Elna and Jabula and explain that to them. And we all accept it and get on the same page. It's something that we have and that we can use, and so we take it. Now, it's time to take it to the next level. If they, whoever they are only using Elna because she is the one they can use, it explains why this sort of event was not recorded on the vineyard before. I mean, how long had these guys been waiting? Were they waiting? Were they waiting for someone possible to come along? They needed her to get to something. Maybe something so they can go? I mean, do they need something or does something need to happen? Before we can figure that out, we want to try to tap into Elna's mind and hopefully catch one of these communications. For this, Ryder brought her brainwave receiver. One piece to it is this cap. And these caps and system are something that's nowhere near ready for any sort of public distribution, but they are the result of testing and research by a special group of neuroscientists. Neuroscientists who are trying to find out ways to translate brainwaves into the written word. How cool would that be? Well, Ryder became an approved tester in the paranormal arena to use this. You know, for her situation, when there is a medium, for instance, receiving a message from beyond, a lot of the times that medium enters a state where they aren't really talking to you, you know, but then they'll tell you what the message was or what was told to them after they come out of it. Well, this device was proving useful for this, providing more of the communication and helping to prove that something was happening in the first place. Although not perfect, we're going to try to use it to tap into Elna so that we can catch one of her communication sessions with whatever's trying to reach her and see if we can capture what's going on. Because what Elna records doesn't seem complete. And with all the repeated stuff, you know, is that all she's really getting? Or is that just what she's retaining? So we intend to find out. This requires Elna to wear this cap while Ryder works the receiver, which is basically like a little laptop, and she can try to fine-tune, you know, into the signal basically until she feels she's getting the most information possible. We, of course, have no idea when she'll be contacted, though, so unfortunately for Elna, she has to keep the cap on, and then if she starts to get something, we're going to connect into it and do our thing. Time seems to move very slow until we get something, but when we do, we're on it. We don't show the screen to Elna as she takes it all in. Ryder gets things figured out, and we wait, and we watch. And in the end, what we get are two sentences. And when that's all done and it seems over, we ask Elna what she got. And she just says more of the same. The message she got was, it's there. But we're looking at the screen, and there's more to it than that. And we turn the monitor to Elna, and we all read it together. It was broken up just a bit, but basically we could get that what they were saying or trying to say was, we are talking to you. We must go. You have what we need. It is there. So it's not much, but it's a lot more than we were getting through Elna herself. So it helps answer some of the questions and gives us at least a little bit of a direction. Now we're fairly certain that there is something there, and if we can find it, maybe this can all stop, and it will help explain what's going on. And then what happened next was nothing we expected, but it definitely gave us more than we thought we were going to get with any of this. So we're all in the sunroom where we were doing all of this, and we're just talking. We're actually a little excited now because we feel like we're onto something and we feel a little bit better about everything. Anyway, there we are chatting, starting to talk about what it all is, what's going on the vineyard, why is this all happening at the vineyard in the first place, when we hear Ryder's receiver making little noises. And Elna still has her cap on. And we look over to her, and then we see her sort of go off like she does. She's staring into nothing. She doesn't say she's receiving any messages or anything, and she doesn't move. And unlike the other times I've seen her go through a contact, her eyes are more open. And instead of just looking like she's in a daze, this time she has more of an expression of being surprised, maybe even scared. Really, it was just this slight look of surprise. Ryder goes over to her receiver and turns on the monitor screen, and sure enough, there's something coming through. But it's not like when we got the brainwave translations just a few moments earlier. In fact, it's not words at all. There's no translation, and instead it looks like there's an image that's trying to come through. But what is it? Where is it coming from? So Elna's just sitting there, and I'm not even sure if she knows what's happening, but the three of us, Frankie, Ryder, and I, gather around this receiver, and we just wait. Ryder plays with some of the controls, and that seems to help, and this fuzzy image starts to take shape, although it doesn't stay up consistently, like it's in and out. But when we start to see the shape of shoulders and a head and arms, we can tell it's a figure. Whatever this is or was, they are sort of this grayish blue from what we can tell, but their eyes really stood out. There were these deep black slanted slits. You could also tell, but they were large. You could also tell whatever this was very muscular and very lean. So we're looking at this monitor and we're not even sure what to make of it when Jabula walks in. And he first notices his wife, who looks like she could start drooling at any second, but then he sees what we're all looking at. This being coming across Ryder's receiver, and he leans in to take a look for himself. This figure is coming across from wherever, and it's not a great signal. What we did know is that the signal had to be coming through Elna. And again, what this told us is that they were using what they could. They were using Elna, and first they were using Elna, and now maybe this receiver was helping as well. It was all so strange because why didn't whatever this is just come to meet us in person or come down and get what they needed? I mean, that we did not know. Maybe we would soon. What was a little creepy to us too was that it seemed like this thing could see us. I mean, is that possible? It seemed like it was because he, I'm calling him a him, this creature appeared to be a he, but he looked around as if trying to figure out who was all there, how many of us were standing there. And when it appeared, he figured it all out, he started to speak. And we were getting this voice, but it also had, you know, a computerized tone over it, probably from the receiver. The voice was fairly deep, and he spoke very, very slowly. And I have no idea how he knew what language to speak. You know, I wouldn't have that answer. I know English is what we all speak. English is the official language of Namibia, so maybe he knew that. But anyway, his first word was very simple. Just said, hello. Then he asked if we could help him. We didn't really know how to talk back to him at first, but then we flipped on the speaker input to the receiver. You know, those are always off because when you're pulling brainwaves, you really don't want any other interference from the room coming in. But we get the speakers on, and with Ryder at the helm, she says that we can try to help him. And then all he says is, we must go. I mean, he might have tried to say something else, but that's all that came through. Kind of looked like he was saying more, but that's all we got, kind of like Elna. And then the image starts to fizzle out. So great, cool, and wow, right? But then what the heck? Is that all we get? Hard to help someone if we aren't getting much. But then as his figure starts to dissolve off the screen, something else starts to appear. It's nothing that elaborate or anything that really makes any sense either, like so much of all of this. It's a red triangle. And it just appears on the screen. After the hype situation of talking to this new creature, you know, we're figuring is alien, of course. Now we get this triangle. That's how we can help him? Well, okay. Then that's what we've got to work with. The triangle stays on the screen for a little while, and then it all just stops, and the screen goes black. So now we know there's something talking through Elna, and we've seen him. And he needs help, and there's this triangle. After Jabula gets out of his shock and we get Elna out of her state and get her some water, we talk about the vineyard. What is the story with the vineyard? Because now we want the full tour. After that session, Elna is completely worn out. She has no memory or knowledge of what happened. You know, talking to the alien guy, that was just lost time for her. She goes to lay down, and Jabula starts to show us around more. Just as we get started, however, we're interrupted by Elna's sister, Neera. She's with her husband, Devesh, and they're in quite the rush to get to Jabula. They stop him and pull him away from us and tell him that they just left Elna and they are demanding to know what we did to her. She's out, well, partly out of it, and it seems they're not very happy about that. Jabula has seen her after some of her more intense sessions, and this time was no different, he said. It's a lot to be used as a vessel, and he believes this is why she's been feeling a little sick a lot of the time, on top of everything else. She's just wearing out from all these contact sessions, plus the stress of all that it means and what it's doing to her. Well, Neera starts getting really worked up, so the three of us decide to sort of walk away. We kind of disappear into the distance. We step out of the small corridor that we were in, and we kind of wait for Jabula around the corner. And we hear Devesh and Neera. And they are pretty irritated. We can't hear what Jabula says back to them, but eventually things get quiet and we hear him walking towards us. And we look around the corner and we see him almost there, but he's just, his hands are up and he's waving them as if to say no, and he's shaking his head no as well. And then when he gets to us, he stops, put his hands down and just looks at us and just says, let's go. So whatever happened, he handled. Jabula really has a lot in him. He's learning to run the vineyard. His wife is hurting and being used. His family wants to take her away, and he's trying to keep us there so we can finish. It's a lot. But you know what? I never saw him once lose his focus or his temper or anything like that. I really did like the guy. Okay, so we continue on with what we're doing. going in the opposite direction of Elna's sister. And Jabula takes us to the different areas of the vineyard and to the winery, which is also on the property. You know, that's where they test, store, bottle their wine, things like that. It's not as sophisticated, you know, as something that you might see in a larger winery, but it's really cool how they actually got it all done. But anyway, that's all great, but there's nothing for us there. I'm looking for something red, something in the shape of a triangle. There's nothing like that in his house. Nothing around anywhere. We do go up to the attic, though, where he has some older items that have been left there through the generations, even by the family before theirs. We start going through some of the items, but we aren't really finding anything. And just when it seems like there's nowhere else to look, because now we've kind of exhausted the attic, Jabula blurts out the cellar. He says that there's an old cellar on the property. Well, we didn't know that. What's that all about? The house that they have now, it was actually built to replace the original home that was there while the other family had the vineyard. I mean, you could tell the house they were in was not original, but what did he mean? Well, they kept the old house while the new house was being built, and the old house, which finally got taken down, had a cellar, and that was left. It was a ways out from the current house, so we'd have to walk just a bit. And I'm not talking super far, but this cellar wasn't right outside or anything. It was about a quarter of a mile away. But it was going to get dark soon, so we'd either have to wait until morning, or we could just go anyway, use flashlights. And none of us wanted to wait. We did take a small break, though. We grabbed some jackets, got our lights together, had a quick bite, and while we ate, Jabula filled us in about this cellar. And he told us that in the older days, it was where they would store bottles of wine to keep them secure, among other things. The cellar was big, he said. You know, of course, now they have more modern ways to do all of that, but that cellar was also used for storage. You know, back in the day, it's not like they had safes or good locks on their homes, so some of their belongings would end up down in their cellars. Not things like clothes or things like that, but just stuff. Jabula didn't honestly know what was all down there. Elna's father went through it and said it was nothing they cared to worry about. Felt right just to leave it all alone and leave it as it was, as part of the original property. And so that's what they did. Maybe, now that we at least have confirmed there is something here our alien guy wants, just maybe there's something down in that cellar that might mean something, or at least tell us something. So we had our flashlights, and Jabula also brought this lantern, and with our lights alone, we headed over to the cellar. We find these two very large wooden doors in the ground. I mean, a bigger entrance than I've ever seen to a cellar, so it already looks interesting. Jabula gets the locks open, and we get down in there, and it was kind of a wow. I mean, this was not, you know, your jam cellar, okay? This was large, and it had sections. There were shelves where wine was stored. There was some pottery. There was a second room, and we made our way over to that and inside of that. And Jabula set down his lantern, and it lit everything up pretty good. And there was a lot of stuff in there, sheets covering a lot of it. It was pretty deep. You know, there was nothing else to do at that point but dive in. One of the sides of that room was filled with bigger stuff. Frankie immediately goes over there and starts pulling things out. Jabula joins him. And the room was pretty big, remember. And the last family did take out a lot. This was just what was left. So we did have room to work in there, you know, move things around. Ryder and I go over to the other side and we start looking through some of the crates that are stacked there. We were in that cellar for, I'd say, 2 hours, looking through anything and everything. I was convinced that whatever we were looking for, it just had to be there. There was nowhere else it could be. I mean, all the other storage on the property was being used for current things. And Jabula had no memory of anything red triangle. Well, we get done going through our crates. There was plenty more items to go through, and we're putting the crates back when Frankie calls us over. And Jabula is pulling this metal thing out of the way, this big metal thing. But when he does, it reveals this crazy large tall red triangle pyramid. And when I say red, I mean really red and shiny. It does not fit in with anything we have seen in this place at all, or anywhere, really. I'd say this thing was a good 6 to 7 feet tall. The cellar alone had 10-foot tall ceilings, which is tall, I know, but back then, at least there, remember, they were using cellars for different things. Either way, this red pyramid has to be what we're looking for, right? We all know it, and we know we need to get it out of there. And we're all thinking, it's going to be too heavy to move. I mean, how did it even get down there? But when Frankie, you know, because he can't help himself, tries to move it, each side at the base is just under 4 feet wide. So he grabs a hold of two edges and he goes to push on it to try to move it, expecting it to be very heavy. But then we're all surprised because he does move it, no problem. I mean, it has some weight, but not much. It's all very weird. We want to get it outside so we can check it out. And now that looks like it might be possible. So it really even wasn't that bad. We slid it over right under the doors, and then the four of us were able to lean it over and get it up the stairs by sliding it. And it took a little bit, but we did get it up there and onto the ground outside. And I'm looking at this thing, and I'm just amazed. If you could see this thing, you could see what I mean by how red and shiny it was. I mean, if we saw something like that, you know, somewhere around here, it would have to be something very special with a very special surface. For this triangle pyramid, sliding it up those wooden stairs did nothing to it. These are old wooden stairs. You see my point. But there wasn't a scratch on this thing. Now we're in a small field area with the moonlight. We can get a better look at this thing. It was cool, but it was just this red triangle pyramid. What was it? And the material. It wasn't glass. It wasn't plastic. None of us knew what it was, but it was perfect. Smooth, shiny, zero flaws from what we could tell. I put my hand to the red surface of this thing, and it was cool to the touch, and I'm just looking up to the top of it, and then I get this warm burst that runs through me, and we hear this small beat of a hum. I jump back. It's like I woke this thing up. There was more to this thing than meets the eye, that's for sure. Well, Ryder and I go back to the house to get more lights and one of our kits. And the kit that I want to get is this type of meter. It can read heat, energy, things like that. So when we get back to the pyramid, Frankie's getting some night shots of this thing, and I get to work hooking up my meter. I get my little electrodes hooked up to it and get it all turned on, and it doesn't even take a full minute for my meter to start going crazy. And the meter only goes up so far. I mean, we were off the charts. This fairly light in weight, right? Completely perfect red pyramid is full of energy. We couldn't explain it, but that's how all this job was. We accept it because whatever this thing is, it does not belong here, and it has a lot of energy for something. I walk back over to it and put both my hands on it this time, and I feel the same energy pulse, and I feel it a few times, and then it becomes constant. And we hear that low hum, and then that ends up constant also. After a few seconds of that, the pyramid starts to get this inner light to it. I mean, it's definitely awake now. I take a step back, and when I do that, we hear something else. It's another hum. It's deeper, though, and it was coming from above us. We're all standing there, and we're slowly looking up, and as we're doing that, Elna shows up. She just comes up to me and she asks, you know, what's going on? I didn't expect to see her. And before I can even answer, she turns to the red pyramid. She goes behind me and she puts her hands on it. You know, I hear more of this hum and I look back to the sky where there's nothing. And I mean nothing. It's just night, sky, moon, all that. But then something starts to appear. Something's coming through all of that. It's being uncloaked. And it's big. I mean, it's not the hugest thing I've ever seen, but it is of good size, and it's a triangle, and it has a lot of lights on it. Clearly, we have some sort of spaceship here. All we can do at this point is watch and wait. I mean, it's apparent that by bringing this thing out, maybe because I engaged with it and woke it up, these beings got the signal, and they're now here to pick it up. And sure enough, this very bright circular light at the bottom of this hovering triangular ship lights up, and it was bright, like a giant headlight. And then this next part happened in literally seconds. This beam of light shoots out of this light circle instantly. And it was very crisp, meaning it didn't fade out at the sides, you know, like a flashlight light or something. It was very direct light. At least that's how Frankie described it. He was outside of the light beam, as was Ryder and Jabula. But me and Elna, we were inside the light beam. I look out at Frankie and Ryder, and then I turn back to grab Elna. Right when I put my hand to her arm to grab hold of her, everything changes. That's what I know. From the outside, and from Frankie and Ryder and Jabula's view, we disappeared. I mean, it was lights out, as if someone literally turned off a light switch. Elna and I vanished, along with the Red Pyramid and the light beam. It was like the light just jumped out of that ship, grabbed a hold of us, and that was it. So it was gone. We were gone, leaving Frankie, Ryder, and Jabula there by themselves in that small field area. Now, up there where we went, it wasn't like I got somewhere and I walked around and saw stuff and all that. It was very bright, and I had flashes of moments. I remember seeing some more of those blue-gray guys. There was something about fuel, and there was a thank you. I don't know what all happened up there, honestly, and I don't know if it's something that I'll ever get to know. I didn't see Elna while I was up there, just some of those blue-gray guys. Frankie and Ryder said we were gone a good 20 minutes, but for me, it seemed only like a minute or so. All I can say about it is that it was the most beautiful thing I ever saw that felt incredible. And that feeling, that's what made it so beautiful. It's very hard to explain, but you know that feeling that you get when something is so amazing or beautiful, it sends this feeling up through your body and you can't even control it? Well, being up there gave me that feeling. It was crazy. And I came back feeling better than I ever knew I even could. And for Elna, she came back and she was no longer feeling sickly. In fact, she didn't go on to have any more of her same issues. When we did get back, we were popped back to the ground by that same light beam, and it was very fast. The light was there, and so we were there, and then the light was gone, all in an instant. And then we're all looking up again at the spaceship, and we see that red pyramid, the one that we just pulled out of the cellar. It's up there, hovering just outside of this ship. We see this large square hatch door slide open, and then the red pyramid starts to float up into it. It disappears into that, and then the square door closes and lights up, and then five more squares, just like it, light up. This pyramid must have been the final one in a set of six of whatever it is. Sure made sense, because the minute it was in and everything was lit up, that ship got going and was gone. They didn't go back to their cloak mode either. They stayed there, and when those things fired up, they were out of there and fast, and we got to watch it. This whole spaceship pyramid thing was like one of those passing moments that we've all had, you know, two people that shouldn't or maybe never would meet but do, like when you help a stranger and you feel good, you know, they're different than you. You will never see them again, but it meant something to you that you could help and you don't forget it. It was that on a very big scale. This red triangle pyramid was some sort of alien contained energy fuel cell. And these guys were looking for it. It was something they needed so they could fully power up and get out of here. And they needed help from us getting it. Nothing more, nothing less. Why were they here in the first place? I don't know, and I don't think we get to know. Generally, people have no idea how many others visit our planet. I mean, just think of how curious we are. We'll invade jungles and the life there, woods, forests, islands, the ocean. We are not the only explorers out there, and not all explorers mean harm. It would seem this one just lost something. I don't know why or how, and I don't need to, but they found an opportunity to get it, and they took that chance. And as for these aliens that came to visit, that's something I can't explain, and like I said, probably will never be able to explain. My only guess is what I said. You know, but why were they here? Why couldn't they come down, though, and just get this themselves? Well, who knows? Maybe they can't function on Earth. Maybe they can just come and look around. I mean, we can't just go swim around in the ocean for hours without our special equipment. Some places we can't get to at all. Maybe they just didn't have what they would need to function here. We don't get to know that. Think about all the alien sightings that people have, that they claim they have. There never really is an explanation. And from my experience, I don't have the full answer either. But that is how it all went down. And after it all, Jabula would go on to deal with the family. And they did get it together in the end. It was obvious there were no other issues with Elna, but the family had some mending to do, had to get over their shock. Eventually, things would get put back together. You know, this family was close, and they would be close again. Elna's mind was special, not sick. She was receptive to more is all. She was not delusional. But that's what would make sense to most people, isn't it? But really, her mind just made it possible for these alien creatures to contact someone who could help them. That's it. As humans, we always want the quick answers to strange things. We feel better when we know. We don't like things that are too unusual, and we definitely don't love things that we can't explain. And that was all this case was about, everything. We didn't know the answers to any of it. And for Elna, she was the thing that her family couldn't explain. But there were answers. Answers people could find, that being her diagnosis. That made sense to them. And it could have made sense to anyone. But it was Jabula's belief in Elna that changed her fate. When we know something is wrong, ignoring that feeling doesn't change that. When we know something is the right thing, will we do it? Will we make the move? Sometimes yes and sometimes no. But why no? Fear? Intimidation? Should we ever ignore our feelings that we know are correct? Jabula knew, and he did not back down. Even while making enemies in his own family, he stood in his position strong. That took guts. Just because you don't know the answer doesn't mean there isn't one. Maybe you have to work for it. What was Elna's family to believe, that she really was being contacted by someone somewhere who needed her? Well, that didn't make any sense. That was too hard to figure out. So no, they weren't going to believe that. And this was a case of extreme denial, the type of which most will never have to go through, but don't forget the power of that either. Denial will keep you right where you think you want to be, as long as you use it. Elna was diagnosed with delusional disorder and paranoia. Those things are no joke. For people with this, it's not very fun either. It's very serious. Something inside of Jabula told him to believe what she was saying. He couldn't explain it, but there was just something, and he took that chance. So in the end of it all, I say, don't just look for the obvious answers so you don't have to deal with something anymore, and always, always believe in the extraordinary. And so the job went. I hope you enjoyed the job today. Be sure to check back for more. Subscribe, turn on your notifications so that you know when I post next. Thank you for listening. And until next time, and I will talk to you all soon.